Route 616, your home for all Finn's Marvel main continuity. The gang is back again as we cover our special 75th episode of Route 616, not only our 75th episode of this podcast, but also our 100th video on our YouTube channel.
Nice.
So we're honoring the number of millennium Dan has been alive today.
One millennium. Count the number of what Champions League wins you guys have? Isn't it
we
one?
Won.
We have seven. You have one.
I mean, this season, yeah.
Oh no, you might have two. You know, maybe two.
We have a.
Just thank God we don't have three.
Want to see my elephant impersonation?
Shit. Send us money now. We'll make Dan keep his clothes on.
Yeah. How to monetize the channel. Give me money or I'll show you the elephant impersonation.
Oh,
I don't
shit.
Think YouTube would caught into that, to be honest.
We just have to call it naked yoga.
Oh, yeah, okay, fair enough.
Apparently they allow that now.
Yeah, apparently.
Whatever works.
So. I mean, we have an interesting lineup of comics, but normally
no,
we fuck around for
no,
a little
don't.
Bit. Yeah, it's a Dan, this is the perfect lineup for Dan today.
No, it's not.
Three Spider-Man, the Sergeant Fury, and two Daredevil. So that's Dan's favorite.
Oh, is
all
that the
go.
Time? I gotta go. Sorry, guys. Fuck. Three fucking Spider-Man.
Yes. A very big, important arc for Spider-Man, too.
Very good one.
Okay.
Dan will hate it.
You don't know that. You don't know that.
Yes, I do. It's got Spider-Man in it. You will hate it.
It's got J. Jonah Jameson in it, so it's not entirely horrible.
That's true. There are some classic Jonah moments in this.
Yeah. No, it's not like Sergeant Fury. Boy, oh boy, was that a stinker.
So any pop culture stuff that we wanted to get out before we get into the comics?
In the world of unnecessary sequels, they're making a sequel to Twister using the alien naming convention.
Oh, goody. That's not what we wanted to hear.
And I don't remember seeing any Bill Paxton in the trailer taking away, like, the one good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as long as they don't try and remake Tremors, we're okay.
Tremors already has, like, 14 sequels that no one speaks of.
That's right. But the original was so much fun.
Oh, I love the original Tremors.
It was so good. Yeah,
kind Ryan, of like Tremors was an old horror comedy.
I know
comedy.
What Tremors is.
Broke into the wrong goddamn rec room, didn't you?
I love
oh
that.
My
I
God,
need to
that
watch
is,
Tremors again.
Just one of the best lines ever in a film. Literally one of the best lines ever in a film. Yeah.
Haven't thought about Tremors in like 20 years.
Oh,
and now I need to watch it again because I love that
movie.
Oh
my God, it's so much fun. It's almost as much fun as Clockwork Orange.
Concern me.
Join us for a future podcast where we pull a Clockwork Orange on Ryan and make him watch the rest of Red Dwarf. Just saying.
I'll get around to it someday.
Right.
Right.
Of
sure
course.
After you finish watching.
At the same
watching,
time, Dan
what?
Formally joins the Spider-Man fan club.
Yeah, well, exact same time.
You know, I got to get through those last seven episodes of Iron Fist Season 2, and then...
I haven't watched any
since the last time I...
you could be sitting there watching something good, or you could be watching Iron Fist.
Well, it's better... I mean, it's gotten better.
How?
It couldn't have gotten worse.
Okay, well,
pretty
granted,
much.
You're not wrong with that. But, I mean, there's so much entertainment out there that
It's like the Inhumans TV show. It's like once you get past that pretty poor once first episode,
once you get past the show,
like,
it's good.
Oh, it doesn't get worse than that.
Yeah, once you watch the last episode, it gets better.
That was definitely true of Inhumans. Holy shit, that show sucked.
Oh, it was so bad. It was just terrible.
I think the first episode was so poor it made the rest of it look a lot better.
No.
Like, that's the thing.
No.
Everyone who complains about the modern Marvel TV shows has not watched Inhuman.
Yeah. Now, I mean, to be fair, DC has made some pretty bad stinkers as well. But, you know, they have done some good stuff.
Mostly in the realm of animated films.
Oh, some of their animated films are excellent.
I didn't know that. I just found out that in the mid-90s that Fox made a pilot / movie for Generation X that was first live-action X-Men adaptation.
Don't watch it.
Apparently it's awful. I didn't know it existed, so.
Oh, anything pre-Iron Man was pretty bad.
Yeah, the first two X-Men were pretty good. And the Spider-Man movies.
The first X-Men wasn't bad. But after that, it was just...
The second one was inoffensive eye candy.
The second one's really good, and then they take away some of the great aspects of the second one right away for the third one.
Gotta follow that Sam Raimi Spider-Man trilogy arc.
A.K.A. Nightcrawler.
You guys get
pretty
started.
Good.
You
really
guys get
good.
Started. I need 2 minutes.
What the fuck?
Well, there goes Dan for a couple minutes. I don't know. I don't really have a lot pop culture wise this week because I
was expecting we'd carry things further on the Twisters thing, but now that I remember, my co-host has not seen it.
Nope. Not one I've seen.
I mean, in this case, I'm not going to mock you for not seeing the original Twister. It wasn't that good. That's part of why I'm so surprised they made a sequel of it 25 years later.
I've heard it's not good at all.
It was interesting at the time because it was one of the first movies that they could pull off that sort of CGI of it.
I mean, I guess now is a good time to plug the new series that started on the channel last night for a different wrestling book and game than normal with Pro Wrestling Sim. With the Extreme Revival mod, booking some 2006 WWE, so a passion point for me personally.
Just remember, when Kevin Thorne starts getting pushed, it's all his fault.
We'll see what happens. But yeah, go check that out. It's pretty fun. Rebooked ECW One Night Stand 2006 with my own vision, with some copying of what happened in real life. So, yeah. Go check that out. And some drug tests were failed after the first show, so stay tuned for that.
I'll be interested to see going forward how good the randomization is in that game, but like events coming up and people wanting to put other people over and stuff.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Dan is coming back. Welcome back, Dan.
Hey, sorry, just giving somebody driving directions.
We gotta
no worries, you mostly just missed me roasting Ryan for not being aware what Twister is and then admitting that Twister is probably not worth knowing what it was.
I mean, it wasn't great, but it did have some funny moments.
Yeah, the flying cow was entertaining.
Yeah, it was.
So, anything else before we head to the comics? Any other interesting things you've seen there?
No, I'm good. It's been a rough week, so.
Didn't watch Godzilla Minus One in color yet?
No. In black and white, you mean. I've seen it in color. I haven't seen it in black and white.
Oh, yeah, in black and that was the re-release. That's right.
Yeah.
I had them backwards. Yeah, in black and white.
No, I haven't seen it in black and white. I don't know that I'm that keen on seeing it in black and white.
I kind of don't want to see the black and white. Because I think it might make the janky CGI end a little one really obvious.
Yeah, well, that the fact black and white films were filmed in black and white, and lighting was designed accordingly.
Yeah, for it. When you just recolor,
color wash it.
Right? Yeah, you just color wash it, it gets dark and muddy because it's not made for it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's
and in
that's
normally probably colored filmed and lit stuff, there's more dark colors than light colors.
Yeah, then it just starts feeling like you're watching.
Don't normally get.
Then it just starts to feel like you're watching Aliens versus Predator Requiem.
Unironically, yes.
Pretty much.
I remember, because I play Magic the Gathering a few years ago now, they did two series of horror-themed Magic cards, like Gothic horror, and then they got the fun idea of releasing the two of them together as one set with all in black and white to cash in on the horror theming and make it look like old movies, and they were just the muddiest, ugliest art imaginable, because you can't just take color art and redo it in black and white.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work that way. Yeah. Anyway, so who's doing what first?
Well, Amazing Spider-Man starts us off today. Don't get too excited, Dan.
You sure?
So, yeah. Okay. Yeah, don't get too excited.
Which one, huh?
Well, we're starting with Amazing Spider-Man 31, which is titled If This Be My Destiny. Stan Lee and Steve Ditko still working on this bad boy. Sam Rosen's on the letters. September 1965 release date, 20-page story, and Bill's going to take us away for the start.
All right. Before I start, I'm going to mention I actually do like this cover. This is a cool cover with the spider effect.
Yeah, like, it's very not of its time.
It feels more modern. Like, it's not perfect, but it feels like they're trying something that a modern cover would do. Anyway, Spider-Man is swinging around town when he notices a group of masked men escaping by helicopter from a plant that produces atomic devices. As he swings on board and fights the men in the helicopter, they dump the stolen cargo into the water below. Spider-Man doesn't notice this as he's assaulted by sleeping gas and has to swing out before he falls prey. As he looks underwater, the men and the gadgets have disappeared. The helicopter crashed in between, thanks to Spider-Man, but they didn't mention that part in this summary.
Oh, so now he's running around causing accidents in the air, too. That's awful.
Yeah.
What a bastard.
Meanwhile, in an underwater base, a person sends a task force to retrieve the cargo from the water. Spider-Man leaves and goes to register for his first year of college. Peter comes home and Aunt May suddenly faints. I love how this person has just skimmed over everything.
That's because nobody cares.
Seriously. After Dr. Bromwell visits, he decides to send her to the hospital. As Aunt May lies sick, Peter goes through at school, but being in such a depressed state of affairs gives everyone the cold shoulder, including new classmates Harry Osborn and Gwen Stacy.
He should feel a little guilty about causing that helicopter crash.
They didn't even have any stolen material in it when he crashed it.
It's terrible. Really, it's just terrible.
Unfortunately for Peter, everyone sees him as selfish because of his science scholarship. News at the Daily Bugle is slow, so J. Jonah Jameson assigns Frederick Foswell to stir up a story and, disguised as Patch, finds out that nuclear devices are to be loaded on board a ship later that night. Unsure of the tip, Patch gives it to Spider-Man to investigate, and as he arrives, he sees the same masked man from before. Sentence breaks, person who wrote this. Jesus Christ. He fights them only briefly before they dive into the water. Spider-Man stops the theft, without pictures, and we learn that he has foiled the plans of someone called the Master Planner. The Master Planner is plotting his revenge as well as his research on an atomic ray in an underwater base. Meanwhile, two doctors finish up tests on Aunt May and come to the conclusion that she may not live much longer.
So let me guess, Peter goes to the hospital and beats up the doctors?
No, that's next issue.
Okay, kind of figured.
We're ending here with the Master Planner baiting a trap with atomic stuff.
Oh, so he's becoming the masturbator.
Ooh, you were waiting for
actually,
that, weren't
you? Actually, I think that's also the next issue, but I had to set up the masturbator joke.
You will.
I have been waiting.
The servant waits while the master baits.
So that was issue 31 of Amazing Spider-Man. The part of this three
Route 616, issue join us for more mature conversation about comics.
That's right.
That's a hard sell if I've ever heard one.
Right after I set up a masturbator joke.
We all quickly got on the same track. That was pretty impressive.
Didn't take long. We're mature.
So, I gave that one a 4. I really liked it.
Yeah, I also gave this one a 4.
The site is really in line with us, too. It's a 3.92 average on the site, so pretty well agreed. It's a pretty good comment.
Yeah, and that's accounting for the fact that there's always a couple of trolls that, like, rate everything good a 1 and everything terrible a 5.
Or
I don't rate them.
No, I'm hypothetically speaking.
Yeah.
So we shall move on now to Amazing Spider-Man number 32, which is titled Man on a Rampage. We've got the same team except Andy Yankus joins the color and Artie Simicus switched for a letter here. And
I think they must have been up against deadlines or something because... Or because Steve always colored his own things.
Yeah, so maybe he needed a
little
help. So
them to bring in a colorist, especially someone like Andy, who I don't know, he has very few coloring credits, and they're almost all on like titles that are traditionally colored by other people. I think he's just mostly a fill-in guy. Like, his main credits where he seems to have runs on stuff are Shogun Warriors and Micronauts and stuff.
So the lower, the C titles and stuff, then.
Yeah, he's probably, like, an, contractor.
Yeah. You're a cool guy. We'll give you some work, just not on their important stuff.
Unless, Steve's late again.
You sign titles to me.
So... October 1965 release date, 20-page story, and Bill will also take this one away.
All right. The master planner, who has been running experiments and stealing radioactive material, is actually Dr. Octopus. So he's got lots of hands for debating.
So I popped right away.
It was pretty obvious last issue who he was.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Peter Parker is delivering new photos for the Daily Bugle when he's spotted by Betty Brant. Peter is conflicted by the fact that she loves him but hates Spider-Man, and he decides the best thing is to make her angry so she forgets about him. Because we forget about people we don't like. Ned Leeds tries to reason with Peter, but he shoves Ned aside to not burden. And, I'm going to fix that because I can't even read that in the current form. He shoves Ned aside to protect his... secret identity, so Betty doesn't worry about it, basically. After this, Peter goes to the hospital where he learns Aunt May is dying because of radioactive material in her blood. He figures that she may have received this from him during a blood transfusion. Feeling responsible for not only Uncle Ben's death, but now perhaps Aunt May's, he is determined to save her. He realizes Kurt Connors might be able to help, and he swipes a vial of her blood and brings it to him for help. Peter raises money to get a serum called ISO 36, which may save Aunt May. As they prepare for its arrival, Dr. Connors is told that it's been stolen, and Spider-Man goes to track it down. Spider-Man tears up countless henchmen hideouts, throwing cars like toys, and finally finds a trapdoor in an alley. He follows the Master Bader's henchmen to an area where the ISO 36 serum lies unguarded. As he's shocked off... of the ceiling with electricity, he begins a fight with Dr. Octopus, who is frightened by the intensity and strength Spider-Man now shows. As he hurls a rock at Dr. Octopus, he destroys his support beam and the entire lab comes crashing down. As he's trapped underneath a huge and heavy iron unit weighing tons, Drops of water come splashing on the canister of ISO 36, with the river slowly flooding the lab. And that's the end of that issue.
Yeah. Well, looks like Dan's going to miss being angry at our ratings, because... But a really awesome issue.
I'm actually well below the site average on this one.
Probably. You're probably well below me on this one. Holy shit. I gave it a 5. We're in completely different spheres. This is everything that I want from a Spider-Man comic.
I found it really drug with the non-Spider-Man stuff. Like, they put in the Pete drama with Betty. And it felt like padding mostly, like it needed to happen, but I don't think that was the place for it.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably the weakest part of the issue, but they did kind of have to get out of the way, I suppose.
It felt like something that should be happening between key stories, not in the middle of one. If they had focused more on people thinking Peter was a dick because he was distracted by worrying about his aunt. Like, that was good stuff, and this just felt like forced drama for the sake of drama.
Fair enough. I respect it. I didn't expect our ratings to be so different on this one.
It's pretty wild. To be honest, that's a bit of a surprise.
Neither of us are technically in line with the site average. I guess I'm technically closer because of the...
You are definitely closer. Point. And I know I'm an outlier on that issue, not loving it. I mean, it was a Spider-Man. It was good. Because there's very few bad Spider-Man issues. But,
In this time period...
Yeah, really, we need to wait for, really? Like, Jerry Conway for it to start really being bad.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Okay, go ahead. Keep going. Go on to the next one.
Funnily enough, I've enjoyed the bad Spider-Man's less than Bill has overall. There was that annual, there was the B story of the second issue, there was issue 8 with the fucking robot. There's been a few that have been a little bit of a mess, but anyways.
I think you tend to value the villain higher than I do.
Probably.
Because, like, some of the ones I've liked, in spite of a weak villain, because there's good Peter Parker story stuff happening, whereas you tend to, if the villain's not good, you don't like the issue.
Yeah, I mean, fuck the Tinkerer and the alien.
I was thinking of the cat. Like, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, but I still gave that one a 3. That one was alright. Mainly because of the Peter Parker stuff, like you were saying. But anyways, let's move on to the last of this trilogy of comics, which is Amazing Spider-Man 33. This one's titled The Final Chapter. Good news, Dan, this is the final issue of Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, thank God.
We've got the same team. Andy Yankus is gone, so Steve must have been alright. And Artie Simic is on letters. Continuing from last issue, November 1965, release date, 20-page story, and I will take this one away. Spider-Man is trapped by tons of iron and finds it in himself to raise the giant mechanism trapping him to rid himself of guilt given by Uncle Ben's death. Jesus.
Whoever wrote this probably wasn't a native English speaker.
Given by Uncle Ben's death and to save Aunt May. Unfortunately, the fact that we read synopsis after the fact and you're not in the moment reading the comic, all the drama is taken away from this big moment.
Yeah, this is like a 4 or 5 page sequence of him trying to lift this thing on him.
This is an iconic Spider-Man sequence. This is very important in his history as a character. It is brilliant.
It's one person alone in a room, and it's fucking gripping.
It's absolute. It's dread, it's guilt, it's a lot of fans. It's really good emotional storytelling in a time where that's not necessarily a big part of comics.
Yes, this reads like, that sequence reads like a modern comic. including the fact that they majorly cut back on speech bubbles and text boxes and let the art tell the story.
Yeah. As he exits, his leg is hurt, but he grabs the serum and soon the lab is flooded with water. He lets himself be swept along the current, yet as he makes his way to the surface, he finds more henchmen waiting for him. Going ballistic on the henchmen, he makes his way to Kirk Connors' lab with the serum. After testing it successfully on his own blood, he reasons it may be a cure for Aunt May. By the way, he has to sneak his own blood because he doesn't want Kirk Connors to know he's Spider-Man, blah, 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 and figure it out. Connors phones the hospital to approve the serum Spider-Man is delivering. Meanwhile, Spider-Man goes back to take pictures for the Daily Bugle and phones Frederick Foswell to get the scoop of the year. As Peter delivers the pictures to J. Jonah Jameson, Betty Brant is shocked to see Peter bruised and beaten, which she says is from trying to get pictures. She fears that she'd lose an adventurous Peter Parker the way she did with her brother. Peter then barters with Jameson on the pictures to raise money for Aunt May's hospital bills, as well as all the scientific equipment he pawned off last issued by the ISO 36. By the way, it's a pretty fun and brilliant moment where Peter kind of gets a bit of a backbone with Jameson, and it's a pretty fun interaction there.
I also have to give props for him actually being beat to fuck. They didn't do that in comics back then, so to actually show the protagonist with, like, bruises and bandages on his face, like...
Well, that was just fans rebelling against them, putting out even more Spider-Man. That's all that was.
This is why Spider-Man took off, because it was a more grounded and realistic character than a lot of other superheroes.
Now, Dan, we didn't have Otto with a hammer.
Uh-huh.
After getting the money, he heads to the hospital to find her assaults on Aunt May, and while he's being looked at, a nurse announces that the results are in. It seems the ISO 36 has cured Aunt May after all. After making sure that Aunt May is out of danger, Peter Parker goes home to get some well-deserved rest. Ta-da. That is the end of the story.
So you were saying last issue is everything you want from a Spider-Man? This is everything I want from a Spider-Man.
I mean, this is also everything I wanted, because I gave this a 5 as well.
Yeah, so did I.
I love both these two parts. But this one is obviously the better and most important one, I would say.
I actually think my one complaint about this is him fighting with the goons when he's leaving.
It feels at a place like that's the part you don't remember about the comic when you do like a retrospective look back. You don't really remember that there's goons on the way out that he's fighting. That's just
there because at this point they believed that superhero comics needed to have action in them.
That's kind of the part you skip over.
Yeah, this would have been a better comic if he got the machinery off him, left the now empty base with the ISO 36, got the thing made, and treated Aunt May without the fight. The fight was felt like padding and was mostly just there because they're like, it's a superhero comic. He needs to fight someone.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty minor complaint.
That's a nitpick, and I didn't want to actually dock the comic because that's me being upset with where comics as an art form were as a whole at that point in their development, rather than this is a huge writing mistake.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Do you mind if I do the two Daredevils now and you can do your second one later? Just, there's more.
It won't really mess with our timing because we're breaking the Daredevil story arc anyway, so sure. I don't have a problem with it if you're already.
Yeah, we can do that. We'll just preface that we would have done the Sergeant Fury 26 next, but we'll do the Daredevils so Dan can get out of here.
Yeah, and Fury's kind of out of normal timing anyway because it's flashbacks to World War II, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter too much, so we can do that. So Daredevil 12 will be our next comic. Sightless in a Savage Land. Stanley writing this bachelor, he boy is he. John Romita Sr. debuts here on art. And
the
apparently one
redeeming feature
Kirby
of these Daredevils.
Yeah. John Romita Sr. doing the cover and the inks and everything. Letters by Sam Rosen. November 1965 release date, 20-page story. And Dan can take this one away. Have fun, buddy.
Oh, hey, and away we go. And starts with, after Foggy Nelson won the role of the New York's next DA, Matt Murdock has decided to close up Nelson and Murdock in order to travel. While taking a cruise, the Plunderer, an infamous pirate, attacks. Changing into Daredevil, Matt battles the Plunderer's men. Meanwhile, in the Savage Land, Kazar and Zabu become aware of an attacking party of swamp men that are seeking out the Jungle Lord in order to destroy him. When the swamp men attack Skull Island, good lord, Kazar and Zabu go to stop them. Back aboard the ship, Daredevil gets the upper hand over Plunderer's men. However, he's forced to stop when Plunderer threatens to throw the crew overboard if he doesn't surrender. Being taken aboard the Plunderer's ship, Daredevil also finds that it is a submarine and that the Plunderer intends to take Daredevil to Skull Island. Their arrival on the island lands them in a fight against Kazar, and Daredevil is forced to attack the Jungle King, who easily defeats the man without fear and somehow knocks out his powers. Okay. Being forced into retreat, Plunderer leaves Daredevil behind. Kazar decides to take Daredevil in and seek out the powerful Juju Berries to heal Daredevil. As Zabu leaves Daredevil's side to save Kazar from a man-eating plant, Daredevil's unconscious body is left alone and at the mercy of the arriving Ma Gore, last survivor of the Ape Men. This story is continued. Next issue.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, this is pretty...
This sucked. This sunk.
Oh, this is not exactly encouraging.
No, this is
barely two stars.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's only
barely
because
two stars.
Story was coherent.
Well,
to be fair, yeah, it is coherent, but it's kind of silly.
It's incredibly silly, but with only a 5-star rating system, one tends to be left to ones where it's actually hard to tell what's happening. Here it functioned as a story. It just wasn't an interesting story.
No, but it is silly. Right.
Very much so.
It's very much Edgar Rice Burroughs scene through the filter of someone who read it when they were 12.
Mm. Matt's the son. He's going to leave because he doesn't want to interview with Foggy and Karen, blah, blah, blah.
Want to guess how long really Matt stays left? Let's do it the fun way. In story arcs.
Yeah, okay. Oh.
It is one story arc.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Let's stumble on to the next one.
Oh. We shall.
I don't even have anything fun to complain about with that story. Other than the Plunderer's terror.
Terrible. The Plunderer sucks, but let's move on to the next story, which is an improvement. Not by much, but it's an improvement enough. This one is titled, issue 13, by the way, Daredevil. This one's titled, The Secret of Kazar's Origin. And same exact team, I'm pretty sure. Well, Jack Kirby does the cover, I guess. December 1965 release, day 20 page story. Dan can take this one away.
Okay. Continued from last issue. Daredevil is unconscious and at the mercy of Ma Gore, following a fight against Kazar. However, even though his powers are lost, Daredevil manages to fight off the beast. While Kazar and Zabu collect the powerful Juju Berries. I'm sorry. I was still trying to come to grips with the Juju Berries. Daredevil's lost his Juju to restore Daredevil's powers. Just as Kazar manages to defeat the man-eating plant, Daredevil is saved by the Plunderer, who explains to him that Kazar is his brother. Oh, my dear God. Back in the States, Karen is worried about Matt, and so she visits Foggy at the DA's office to find out if he's heard anything. They receive a call saying Matt has been lost at sea. Back in the Savage Land, Kazar returns to his cave, where the Plunderer shows part of a medallion, which Kazar has the other half. If Kazar refuses to give it over, he is caged and he and Daredevil are forced to go to Britain. Okay. The Plunderer drugs his crew but keeps Daredevil conscious because he believes that he is the only one that can convince Kazar to give up his part of the medallion. Why would he think that? What exactly is Daredevil going to do? Plunderer explains that he and Kazar were the children of the Off-Lord Plunderer, who discovered a powerful ore which destroyed all other metal and so made the medallion and split it in two. When the two halves were joined, the Plunderer children would be allowed the family inheritance. Okay. However, when Plunderer sends Daredevil down to get the other half of the medallion, Daredevil and Kazar fight. Although Daredevil tries to convince Kazar they're friends, when Kazar busts out of the cage, they are attacked by the Plunderer's minion Feepers. What?
He's the butler of the estate.
I forgot about Feepers.
Jeepers.
This does not exclude any of the terrible stuff that happens. That's just explaining who this character that just turned up in the summary was.
Anyway, Feepers tries to get the medallion for himself as well. However, Kazar escapes and Daredevil follows. Feepers then calls Scotland Yard to come and capture Daredevil and Kazar and use a missile to stop them. How do you capture them if you blow them up with a missile? Please, anybody.
Don't make me try to explain Stan Lee.
That was just convoluted crap.
This story arc isn't good.
You know what's amazing about this story arc?
The fact that they do
actual white savior in the jungle storytelling with Kazar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the most culturally insensitive part of the story. They somehow managed to be worse about British people.
Well,
this one squeezed the three for me just because it was more
stupid,
more comprehensible.
It was right up your alleyway. Dumb.
This one got a 2 from me, but it just wasn't as low of a 2 as the last one. It was better, but it was not remotely good.
This is one of the ones I said I wish I could do half points, so I would have given it a 2.5, but I had to go with where it leaned more.
Yeah, and so I mean, technically, you're closer to the site average, because it has a 2.65.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'm sorry, it's just...
This story arc's really poor form. It's not
just the story arc, it's the elements off the story itself.
Well, they have no
clue what they're doing with Daredevil, and it's really just starting to show.
Shit at the wall and hoping it sticks. Yeah,
but I mean, it's just...
They don't have anything beyond Daredevil is blind to work with. At this point, they've decided to move away from just treating him like Spider-Man.
I mean, at least we get the revelation, even if it's kind of silly, that Kazar and the Plunderer are brothers. Which...
I'll give it credit where credit's due. It's less disappointing than Lucifer caused Charles's paralysis over an X-Men.
Okay. If you say so.
Sure.
Because at least this is a C-level villain being linked to a C-level hero.
He's a pirate.
Yarr.
Gotta be C-level. He's a pirate. Yarr.
He's below C-level. He uses a submarine.
Ooh. Wow.
But yeah. That was At least John Romita is on art.
That's the one redeeming feature of these comics, is they're quite pretty.
Yeah.
I'm just as happy we bumped those out of order, so I don't have to think about them again.
There you go. That was horrible.
We still have 14 to talk about next week, unfortunately.
Oh, God. And guess who's going to get stuck with 14?
I wonder who.
I swear to God, if Chelsea I mean, beats you can't Liverpool play the victim tomorrow,
about taking these Daredevils. You volunteered for it because you didn't want Spider-Man or Fury.
No, actually, you guys didn't want me to have Spider-Man because you knew how you much I shit on it.
Before we revealed that we were going to stick them on you anyway.
That's I volunteered true. Before I knew what was going on. I get voluntold, people. Voluntold.
I'm pretty sure we were still recording when you were like, I'll take Daredevil.
I'll refill next week's lineup before Dan leaves. We have Daredevil 14 to finish off this arc. Sergeant Fury 27 after that. Then we've got an Iron Man run here, which is Tales of Suspense 73 through 77 A story. So yes, it is a 7 comic episode next week.
Okay. Anyway, sorry guys, I do have to run. It's just a little
foolish here. Stuff
I wasn't
happens.
Expecting it to be like this, but we're good. So you guys have fun.
We will talk
to you later.
Talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Call them Madrid.
Bad bastard.
So, on that note, we shall go to our last comic of the day. Not originally scheduled to be, but that's okay. Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos, number 26. This one is titled Dum Dum Does It the Hard Way. We have Stan Lee writing this, Dick Ayers is on art, Carl Hubbell is on inks, Dick Ayers does the cover, Artie Simics on letters, November 1965 release date, 20-page story, and I will take this one away. I didn't actually check to make sure there was a synopsis on the site, but
there isn't a synopsis on the site. Oh,
screw me.
I was just checking when you were running down the intro.
This probably not on the database either.
I mean, this is a pretty easy one to summarize, at least.
Surgeon Fury. I didn't actually check because I was hoping there would just be one on the site, like there has been. Let's see. Oh, there's actually one on the database this time, so we're
okay. That's probably why there's not one on the site. I bet they just do the site. I bet they just write one on our site when there's none on the wiki.
Yeah. The commandos meet up with the skipper, who has transported the Howlers on several occasions, and then discovers from Captain Happy Sam Sawyer that they are to be taken into the Atlantic Ocean to rescue some men who were shot down in a B-17 the night before. They also learn that Dum Dum Duggan was a Munster crew, which, if you remember, Dum Dum was left to heal in America after their furlough. And after getting hurt.
In a moment that would have been much more dramatic if they hadn't just released an annual showing that everyone lives through the war.
Yes.
I think that was literally the same month they made those two.
Probably. On his way back to England to regroup with them after recovering from his previous injuries. In addition, they are told that an infamous Nazi raider, known as the Sea Shark, is in that area and probably already on their way to dispose of the survivors.
Dum Dum Plunderer. I couldn't have made that joke if we hadn't changed the order up, so I'm glad.
That's a good point. Dum Dum and the other three survivors at this point have already been captured by the Sea Shark crew and have been put to work aboard the ship. At night, they are locked in a room and Dum Dum devises an escape path. They capture a Nazi sailor, and one of the officers with Dum Dum puts on the uniform and acts as if he is leading them to another part of the ship. Dum Dum manages to set a timed explosion inside the armory below decks. The prisoners then fight their way to the top decks, where they inform the Nazis that their ship is about to explode. They quickly get off the ship, followed by Dum Dum and his cohorts, just in enough time to watch the Sea Shark explode into a worthless pile of rubble. Fury and the other Howlers arrive shortly and are reunited with Dum Dum and take the Nazi sailors prisoner. And that's the end.
Yeah, this was pretty rudimentary Sergeant Fury story. It was fun to see Dum Dum as the main character instead of Nick, but it was still just your normal Fury story, except it was on a boat.
I really enjoyed this more than most. I like the subverted expectations of... This is a Sergeant Fury regular, but this at the same time kind of isn't, because we actually don't deal with the whole team here. Like, we only really see them at the start and at the end, and most of this is about Dum Dum and random.
Dum Dum and a bunch of random Navy guys.
And I kind of like that subverted expectations of this issue, which led to me giving this a 4. I mean, it's a bit of an inflated rating, but I like this.
And I gave it a 3. I liked it fine, but it wasn't anything special. I did enjoy when Fury shows up and the ship's already completely subdued.
I don't know if there was any. Yeah, that is funny. That's what I liked with the subverted expectations. Like, Dum Dum just pretty much takes care of everything. I don't know if there's any like historical relevance in this one
so much.
I couldn't find
anything indicating that the Seawolf was an actual real sub or so. I think this one's pretty much just pure fiction.
So, I mean,
attacks on Allied shipping across the Atlantic was real, but...
So that ruined my bit because I was going to come prepared and try to know the historical relevance behind an issue for once, and it ruined my bit. I was gonna confuse the fuck out of you guys by being able to talk about the history.
And I'll let you in on a secret. You know how I spot some of these historical moments? Some of them I know, but some of them I just find because people talk about them in the comments on the site.
Fair point.
And then I Googled them so I can sound knowledgeable on the podcast.
I had that plan for weeks to do as a bit, and it ruined it.
Just for that, four.
Yeah, normally there's at least some relevance to history in these search for issues.
Super well-known history, because, I mean, it is the Battle of the Atlantic.
Yeah.
That's a massive historical event. It's just not interesting to bring up, because basically everyone knows about the Battle of the Atlantic. It's not obscure.
Yeah. Now I was hoping for something more in-depth and specific.
And it's possible there is something in there that I just don't know, because I'm hardly a World War II scholar either. And so it's possible that was a reference to a real ship or something that I just didn't know, but rudimentary Googling didn't reveal it.
There could have been a real ship just under a different name too, and that could be what threw it off as well.
Yeah. Although, if that's the case, I actually prefer it to some of their previous choices, like that one where they destroyed an oil field in the Caucasus Mountains, and they used a real battle.
Yeah.
That the Allies lost as the inciting event of the story, except in the story they won it because the Howlers have to win.
Yeah, exactly. So that was this week's comics. We already went through what we're covering next week. So all that's really left is our end of the month stuff, which we haven't done in a couple months because we only did a couple episodes in January. So we saved it for the end of this month. I forget what's on my pull list. So
you have Tales of Suspense, Amazing Spider-Man, Sergeant Fury, X-Men, Strange Tales, Journey into Mystery, Fantastic Four, Daredevil, and Tales to Astonish.
Okay, so there actually is some changes here to my pull list this month. I don't know if you're going to have any, but I'll talk about mine first. I would get rid of Daredevil at this point, and I would add Avengers, because Avengers kind of became pretty decent in this span of comics. And I probably would have been pulled in by some of the covers and seeing these new characters.
Yeah.
Daredevil
changes.
Sucked.
Yeah, Daredevil did suck. I had no changes to mine because I had already dropped Daredevil.
Yeah.
And I'm still not loving those Avengers.
I think I'm
They're
liking the Avengers more than
month,
you.
But I'm still not loving them.
I'm not loving them, but I'm liking them enough that they... I know how I've been with Avengers in the past, and I've kind of been mad on Avengers and still pulled it, so I would be pulling this, unfortunately.
Yeah. I think I'm taking a little different approach to my pull list. Mine is basically a summary of comics I'm enjoying.
Yeah. Mine is that, but also with knowing how I go about comics, I add on to.
Knowing how I go about comics, my pull list would probably just be everything we're reading.
Yeah.
That's why I'm trying to limit it to the stuff I'm actually liking.
Yeah, that's where that part comes in, because that is affecting it, because I'm bad at just keeping pulling stuff. So
yeah, I would 100% still be pulling Daredevil, because I had it on my list, and I'm really bad about stopping comics.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the same, so I'm kind of mixing the two concepts together when I talk about these. But we also have our best and worst of the month to talk about, which we always start with our worst. But
so a quick run through of what we have up for this week. Avengers 19 and 20 with the Swordsman. Sergeant Fury 22, Don't Turn Your Back on Bull McGivney. I don't really remember what happened in that. Tales of Suspense 72, A Story, Hooray for the Conquering Hero with the, I think that's the Mad Thinker.
It is.
It's one
really
of those
bad
shitty C-level villains fighting Iron Man. Avengers 21 to 25, which is the whole Avengers break up and go to the future and reform type thing. And then Doctor Doom at the end. The Fury Annual, Spider-Man 29-30 with Scorpion and the Cat. Fury 23, The Man Who Failed. I don't entirely remember what that one was either. That's the problem with Fury. They all kind of blend together.
22 was the Maulers and Howlers teaming together, I think. 23.
I thought that might have been it, but I don't remember what 23 was at all.
23.
The Man Who Failed is what it's called, but I don't remember what happened in it.
Yeah, I don't know.
They fought some Nazis somewhere.
It must be, because isn't the America one two parts? So that must be the Sister Teresa then.
Yes, that's Sister Teresa. Yeah, that's it. That's right. The Man Who Failed is Percy.
Yeah, that's right. Because it's Percy's origin in that issue.
Yeah.
So
Daredevil 10 and 11 with the Master.
The Anti-Man.
Yeah, the Anti-Man. And the other Master Planner. I think he was called that too.
I don't remember. He was the least important part of that.
He definitely was. Fury 24, where they go to the US, and 25, where the Red Skull becomes a Master of Disguise.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four, 44 to 50, with the Inhumans and then Galactus, and then the stuff we covered today.
So let's start with our worst of the month. I think we discovered we had the same one, so I'll just say Daredevil number 12.
Indeed, it is Daredevil number 12.
Which, upon reflection, recency bias is saving that Iron Man, the Tales of Suspense 72, because I really didn't like that one either, but the recency bias of having Daredevil fresh in my mind is probably saving that one from getting it this month.
I definitely liked it more than the Daredevil. Probably because of what we were talking about, where the villain's less important to me.
Probably.
Because, the Mad Thinker sucks.
I despise the Mad Thinker.
Yeah, he sucks. But the whole stuff about Tony trying to come to grips with Happy being severely injured because of him was interesting.
And I think there was a good Senator Byrd moment in there, too. That
there was good Senator Byrd stuff, and there was good Tony stuff, so that was enough to carry it through to bad villain. Like, it wasn't a great comic, but it was nowhere near the worst.
Yeah, so Plunder and all that bullshit in Daredevil 12 gets the win for worst comic of the month. Pretty easily, to be honest. I mean, there was the tiniest bit of competition, but not much. The best comic of the month. I'll let you say yours first.
Yeah. Best comic of the month, Amazing Spider-Man number 33.
Yeah, I figured that's what you're going with.
We're covering it, so I think people already know why, but that was my best comic of the month.
You know, since you chose it and spotlighted it, I think I'll go with the other one, and I will award and appreciate the iconic comic that lived up to expectations in Fantastic Four number 49, because I can appreciate, I like Fantastic Four more than you.
Oh, definitely.
I actually was shocked that this lived up to expectations.
It was also a fantastic comic. For me, there was no competition, but that's largely because I don't terribly care for Fantastic Four.
Now, Spider-Man is my favorite, and I have a bias, so it's really hard not to award that iconic Spider-Man the award, but since you already had the honors of doing that, I will throw some spotlight on the Fantastic Four that was just as great for its respective title, and just as important.
So that's definitely an argument for me to continue to pick first, because I won't change them when you pick it.
But my thing is, I come in with the, I don't know which one, I haven't committed to one.
I've made up the list of the comics for the month over the week, so I already know which one I picked.
Yeah, because Mine was, I had three or four options there I could have gone with, because I loved two of the Fantastic Fours and I loved two of the Spider-Mans.
Yeah.
And then I nailed it down to those two. I knew I was going either with 49 of Fantastic Four or Amazing Spider-Man 33, because it's the one with the lifting of all that metal that's beautiful and great emotional storytelling, or the awesome show of Galactus and the Silver Surfer in the middle of the trilogy of the Galactus stuff. So I knew it was going to be one of those. So I like spreading the wealth sometimes of what we give our love to or our hate to in certain moments.
Yeah, although sometimes we get a Daredevil 12 and it just deserves it.
Exactly. Or sometimes you get a wealth of bad giant mans you get to pick from and spread the wealth that way.
We don't have that anymore.
No, but that's a throwback to the good old days on this podcast.
Oh, don't worry. We get new contenders. X-Men, Daredevil, occasionally Submariner, although it's not usually that horrible.
Spreading the wolf. But yeah, that was episode 75, a pretty big number for this podcast, of Route 616. We are, stay tuned for more game and wrestling book and content on the channel. Stay tuned for more episodes of this podcast. Hopefully we'll get back to doing some bonus stuff at some point. But anyways, we will head out of here for today. If you're watching this on YouTube, please leave a like, subscribe, comment, and even share if you'd like to. We're also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. If you're listening on Spotify, click that poll. Let us know why you're a big Plunderer fan.
Or you could actually even better, say it. I wasn't even going to put it. I wasn't even going to be able to do it.
Yeah. I mean,
I have a anybody line.
Let us know.
Parnifal Plunder is on the other side of that line.
Leave a comment and let us know if you have your own feepers. But, anyways, we will see you on the next episode for some more mostly solid comics, I think, next week. Besides,
which feels we weird that for a comic run. We're starting with Daredevil, but yeah, that Iron Man run's pretty decent.
Yeah.
Even though it has the freak in it.
Yes, which will be an interesting topic for us to cover next week. Anyways, we will see y'all next time, and peace out.
Have a good one, everyone.